Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, welcome to the Daily Jungle. What an amazing week that was. New crib, cameras up, and we absolutely killed it, and so did you. ESPN dropped a bomb on Foxborough this morning with their report of the beef brewing between the Hood, TB12, and Bob Kraft. Also, wildcard weekend is here. Two doubleheaders with wild point spreads, sure to wreak some havoc, and another amazing day on the phones. Benny and Wisco made his TV debut. So did Smackoff champ Mark in Hollywood. Also, Joe Hayden of the Steelers brought it. Landry Shamet of Wichita State came in. Brad Brunell of Clemson basketball did too. All of that in Alvy's week that was. If it sounds like it was a busy show, you're damn straight. It was, and it was awesome. In terms of the piece itself, now the rumblings started pretty much last night that ESPN was going to drop that piece on the Patriots this morning and that piece was probably going to be bigger than the bomb cyclone. And sure enough, Seth Wickersham's piece did come out this morning, and sure enough, all hell is breaking loose in Patriot Nation. Now, the fact of the matter is, it's amazing that the three of the best to ever do it, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Bob Kraft, that the three of them have been able to check their monster egos at the door and stay on the same page this entire time. I mean, that's a miracle in and of itself. But if something seems too good to be true, generally it is. And if this column is accurate, these three are anything but on the same page. If this column is accurate, the relationship between arguably the three most important guys in the NFL is fraying, and it could be the beginning of the end of the Patriots, allegedly. Now, let me quickly run down the major points in this column. Number one, Belichick does not like Brady's trainer. It tells us something we didn't already know, right? Number two, Brady is tired of Belichick's negative approach and is more into positive thinking at this point in his career. Next, Brady is bent about the fact that he is not, and this is rich, he's bent that he hasn't won the Patriot Player of the Week award this season. Never mind that the guy's going to win the NFL MVP. He hasn't been named Patriot Player of the Week even once, and he doesn't like it. Here's the good stuff. Brady wanted Jimmy Garoppolo traded. Kraft told Belichick to trade Garoppolo and that Belichick was, quote, furious and demoralized after being told that. So there's a lot more to the piece, but those are the main points, the key points. Now, of course, none of the three spoke on the record for the piece. And in fact, here was the quote from the statement, or the statement from the team earlier today. This is a joint statement from Patriots chairman and CEO Bob Kraft, head coach Bill Belichick, and quarterback Tom Brady. Quote, for the past 18 years, the three of us have enjoyed a very good and productive working relationship. In recent days, there have been multiple media reports that have speculated theories that are unsubstantiated, highly exaggerated, and flat out inaccurate. The three of us share a common goal. We look forward to the enormous challenge of competing in the postseason and the opportunity to work together in the future, just as we have for the past 18 years. It's unfortunate that there is even a need for us to respond to these fallacies. As our actions have shown, we stand united. All right, so up until then, they had not commented, and that is their comment. In terms of the piece itself, Wickersham said that he conducted interviews with more than a dozen team staffers, executives, players, and league sources. And if he did, and what all these sources told him are true, look, where there's smoke, there's fire. And if this is true, it's not pretty. As an example, according to Wickersham, a major source of tension between Belichick and Brady is Brady's relationship with his trainer and his business partner, Alex Guerrero. And how that relationship seems to not only influence Brady, but then the other guys on the team as they attempt to get in good with Brady. This is really interesting. According to the newer players, well, this piece says, the newer players have to choose between the Patriot way and the TB12 way. Having to choose between getting in with not only the greatest quarterback ever, but somebody who Wickersham says has so much power in that building that he's actually management. So if you're a newer player and you're trying to decide what's the best way to fit in, who do you post up with? The Hall of Fame coach or Tom Brady. I mean, like, it's one thing for Brady to work closely with his own trainer and guru, who many think is whack and is a quack, but quite another for Brady and that guru to pressure others to work with them, something they both deny. But you see the obvious friction here, right? Brady loves Guerrero. He's more than just his guru. He's the godfather of his kids, or one of his kids. But Belichick doesn't like him and prefers that his guys go to his team doctors. So the players are caught in the middle. They have to choose a side. It all sounds pretty healthy and not at all dysfunctional. But the fact that Belichick has his concerns about Guerrero isn't news. I mean, a few weeks back, he stripped Guerrero of his sideline privileges. He greatly reduced his involvement with the team. And at the time, it seemed like kind of a weird story, but it didn't seem like that big of a deal. This report, though, would make it seem like it's more like a symptom of the tension between Belichick and Brady. A tension that has increased of late because Brady has reportedly gotten sick of Belichick's criticism. And almost bizarrely, he's irritated that he hasn't won the Player of the Week award this year. Which is kind of weird, right? I mean, on the one hand, it seems utterly ridiculous. It's this guy with 5 Super Bowl rings, 4 Super Bowl MVPs, 2 league MVPs, and this guy's pissed that he hasn't won the equivalent of the Student of the Month award at your kid's elementary school. I mean, why would Brady care about something like that? I mean, what the hell does that matter? But then on the other hand, I do get it. If you've already got tension in that relationship and the boss is not giving you the respect that you deserve, an award that you think you've earned, I could see why that might bother Brady. I mean, you're telling me that Brady's got a better shot at winning the league MVP than he does the Patriots Player of the Week award? It's kind of crazy, a little ridiculous. And then there's that whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing. And why was he traded? Why was this guy traded? In fact, why was this guy given away for a second-round draft pick? Was it because Brady went to Kraft and pushed for the trade? Was it because Kraft told Belichick to do it? According to Wickersham in this ESPN piece, Kraft had a very long meeting with Belichick before the trade deadline, a meeting that left Belichick, quote, furious and demoralized, end quote. And then ultimately that ends up with Jimmy G going to San Francisco for a second-round pick. And more importantly, and whether or not this is true is really important, quote, Belichick, having always subscribed to the philosophy that it's time to go, once an owner gets involved in a football decision, left the impression with some friends that the current dynamic was unsustainable, end quote. So in other words, if the guy is going to do more than just scratch the checks and show up when it's time to get the picture taken, and is going to start telling me which quarterback to play and which one to trade, then maybe it's time for me as the coach to get the hell out of here. You know, but then again, did that ever really happen? Did Brady ever pressure Kraft to trade his backup? I wasn't there. I don't know. But I doubt that. I doubt that. I doubt he had to. Listen, I'm sure that Garoppolo didn't want to leave New England, but I'm even more sure that he wanted to start, and he knew that wasn't going to happen because Brady was telling anybody who would listen that he was going to play into his mid-40s. Garoppolo was not about to throw away prime years of his career waiting for this guy to retire. So like I said, I mean, there's so much here, but the bottom line, what are we supposed to make of all of this? Are they coming off the rails? And is this the end of the Patriot dynasty, or is it simply another bump in the road and distraction like Deflategate, Spygate, and something that the Patriots are all going to rally around and use premium fuel en route to another ring? What is it? I mean, is it everything or nothing? What's it mean? I'm going to say it's something in between. I mean, I know this. It's not nothing. It's not nothing. While it all might not be accurate, you know some of this is accurate. We already knew there were existing issues between Guerrero and the Hood. And the fact that ESPN, and this is key, the fact that ESPN got anybody from inside that building to say anything at all, much less all or most of that, tells you that something is rotten in Foxborough. Because for all the talk about the Patriot way over the years, talking about the Patriot way, and the fact that this is what's going on has never been the Patriot way. It tells you something is not right. People inside those walls are talking. So is that something enough to torch what's left of a dynasty and cause a breakup of the big three? Maybe not. Just don't tell me nothing, that this isn't something and that nothing's there, because there is. Something's there. And like any other car wreck on the side of the road, you're going to stop and you're going to stare and you're going to look at it. So where do you come out on this? Clones, can you give me one moment so I can talk to you about Stamps.com? Now, here's a New Year's resolution that you can actually keep. Add Stamps.com to your business and save a ton of time and money this year. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't need that resolution this year because I've already done it, and I wish I had done it sooner. Stamps.com has saved me so much time and so much money. You see, Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Stamps.com is the better way to get postage. You simply use your computer to print U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail, and you let the mailman pick it up. You don't leave your office. There's no more lugging mail to the post office. There is no more hassle. So Stamps.com saves you time and money. Almost everything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Stamps.com. Convenient, easy, reliable, efficient. And those are all the reasons why I use Stamps.com. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Are you ready for a happier new year? Then go to Stamps.com. Hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Once again, to take advantage of this great offer, Stamps.com. Enter jungle. That's Stamps.com. And now it's back to our daily jungle. Joe Hayden is my guest. Joe, it is really good to have you on. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing really well. How are you?
Good, good, Joe. Good to visit. Thanks so much. Now, you spent your first 7 years in the league with Cleveland, which meant that at this time of year, Joe, typically you were sitting at home watching other teams play. Mm-hmm. You're sitting at home, though, this weekend because you've got a bye and you're getting ready for your first playoff game. So what's that like, and how hyped are you about the opportunity?
Oh, I'm super, super ecstatic about it. You know, like you said, my first 7 years, it's been a long time coming. And not only to be in the playoffs, but have a first-round bye to be able to sit and watch some other teams play before. So, you know, it's just I'm in a blessed situation, and I'm super happy to be here.
Now, Joe, you're looking ahead, not back, but I want to ask you this one thing. When you go through the challenges and the rough times that you went through in Cleveland, and you were on teams that went 1-15 last year, there was a team that went 0-16 this year, as a guy as competitive as you, how much of a toll does that take, and how much does it eat away at you when you're a part of that losing, when it's not your fault, but it's bigger than you?
It's super, super tough, because when you're in the position of being in the National Football League, and every year, every time we would go to training camp, literally we would have the goal of thinking that we were going to be able to make the playoffs and try to make a Super Bowl run. With the competitiveness in us, we will always think, like, what can I do better? Like, what is really the problem? And it would suck when you would come into the games and you wouldn't always get blown out. You're losing by a last-second field goal. You're losing by three. You're losing by two. Sometimes it just sucks even more when you're not getting blown out. So you see that it's not that bad, and when you're playing. But from the ownership and from the top down, it's just a little different, because you really can't control what you got to control. What you can control, you can control the team that you have. You can control your teammates. You control your effort and how you play. So it was just tough for me being there so long. Just like, what can I do to change it? Because we were all in. Nobody wasn't. We never quit. We always felt like we always went into games feeling like we could win until, you know, the bad things would happen. But it was just a very, very tough situation with everyone wanting to be a competitor, feeling like we could win. It was a tough situation.
Pittsburgh Steeler Joe Hayden, my guest. All right, so let me flip that on its head. Knowing the competitor that you are, what's it like then to be on a team that went 13-3 this season?
It's a completely different feel. Being able to be on a team like this, top down, organizationally, is ran very, very well. Coach Tomlin's best coach I've ever played for. And then having guys like Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, the Pouncey, just having those type of weapons on offense. So at the end of the day, when we go, we're going into the games like, okay, on defense we got to stop their offense, but y'all have to stop our guys also. So just knowing that you're going into the game with a fully loaded arsenal, it feels good, man. Feeling like we're favored for 95% of the games that we play, and at the end of the day, we feel like we can win every game that we go into.
Well, so you just mentioned that Tomlin's the best coach you've ever played for. What makes him different? What separates him from other coaches in the NFL, in your opinion?
I think that he's very, very able to relate to the players. And at the same time with being able to relate, it's a very, very black and white. It's not like he's just going to sit there and be your friend and everything. He's going to let you know exactly what it is. There's no gray area with the Steelers. If you're with the roles, with what you bring to the team, with what you're supposed to do. And I think he makes sure he keeps everybody accountable. He doesn't hold any cards. He lets you know exactly where you stand. And as far as players can ask, I mean, that's all you can ask from a coach.
Joe, isn't that true? I've done this a long, long time, and players have always said this. All they want is a coach to be straight with them. Just be straight, man. We're grown-ass men. We can handle whatever you're telling us. Just be straight with us. Isn't that what players want more than anything else?
That's all you want, because at the end of the day, what we realize too, and the same reason everybody realizes, it's a business at the end of the day. So some decisions that y'all are going to make, I mean, we won't really understand it, but you're going to make your decisions. But if you keep it very, very black and white, let people know where they stand, what their role is, what they're doing, what they're not doing, and what they're not doing well enough, then to tell them that you're going to be ready to about lose your job if your play doesn't pick up. If you can tell them that and then they can understand they go back out there and don't perform, then they'll expect to get cut and things like that. So just having the player know where they stand, knowing what you want from them is really big. And I feel like some coaches just, they don't keep that. And it's kind of tougher when you just don't let people know, you know what I'm saying, where they stand.
Yeah, in other words, if you don't know there's something wrong, then you can't fix what you don't know.
Exactly.
Joe Hayden joining us. Now, one of the things you also said, that even when you were out with a fractured fibula this season, you still felt like the guys there made you, like you felt like you were still a part of everything. I know you never want to be off the field, but generally, when you're not there doing what everybody else is doing, it feels like you're not a part of the team. So what did it mean to you to have those guys make you feel like you were very much a part of the team?
You know, I just really like it, man. Everybody here feels like they get it. We're all working for the same common goal, and they want the best players out on the field. They want you to feel like, you know, since I'm coming from Cleveland, they know this is my first year. They welcome me, so they made me feel so special and important. And with me, all I wanted to do was just be able to be a contributor to this team. And I feel like they found my spot is going to be corner. I don't have to play outside of myself. All I have to do is make my plays when they come my way, and that's basically all they're asking for. So, I mean, it's just a very, very welcoming organization.
Well, I can tell you what they think about you. I can tell you what the coach thinks about you. When you came back from that injury, Mike Tomlin asked if you wanted to follow DeAndre Hopkins all over the field. I mean, a significant challenge, obviously. What was your reaction when he asked you that, and then how did you go about approaching a challenge like that?
I honestly look forward to those challenges. You know, ever since I came into the league, I was doing it in Cleveland for 7 years. They had me following the number one receiver. I mean, that's what Coach Thomas said. I was doing it versus AB for 7 years when we were playing against them. So it's just something that I do. And then when I was able to come back here, I just appreciated how Coach expected me to be able to do it. You know, I feel like with this defense, it was just myself and Artie. Feel like we're able to cover whoever they want, either left or right, whatever side. But when he asked me for that job, you know, that just means that I feel like he expects a lot of me. He respects my game, and he knows that I'll be able to step up to the challenge. So, I mean, that just means a lot, knowing that the way our defense runs, we don't really have to do that. But for Coach Tom to ask that of me, I felt, you know, especially knew that I needed to go handle my business.
Joe Hayden, my guest. So what were those battles like with AB before you got there? And I don't want to put you in a tough spot since you're now teammates, but is there a better receiver pound for pound in the NFL than Antonio Brown?
My two favorites have been even before playing against before even being teammates, was AB and Julio.
Sure.
And I would just probably now, I mean, this may be a little biased, but since I'm on the team with AB, to be able to see the way he works every day, to see how literally he's the same exact size as me. You're 5'11", 190, and he's able to do this type of work to everyone. I mean, it's special, and I'm so glad to be able to be here, and now I can see the relationship him and Ben have, just the years that they've been able to do this. So I would have to say now, I don't think it's him, his 1A, and I'm Julio 1B.
All right, Joe Hayden, my guest. Now, playing defense in Pittsburgh means you're part of a long and glorious tradition. I mean, an amazing tradition. So what's it mean to you to be a Pittsburgh Steeler?
Man, it's honestly, I'm still, you know, since it happened so quick right before the season started, I wasn't able to really go through training camp with these guys, OTAs, anything like that. But, like, now just going through the year, I just love the way that they work, and everything that we've been talking about this whole year since I've been here has just been about, you know, what we're chasing. We're chasing the championship. We're chasing the championship. And the way that everybody practices and the way that everybody, just this team, is progressing and going up and getting better towards the end of the year, it just speaks volumes. And I'm just very, very happy to be a part of this. And I can get used to this.
Right. Joe, one last thing. You posted a video on Instagram of some Jordan Concords for the playoffs. I mean, these things look almost too good to be true. Are they for real? And if so, how do you feel when you get some kicks like that on your feet?
Man, look, I just got sponsored by Jordan 3 years ago. I was literally the happiest person in the world when it happened. I've been always sneakerhead, always collecting shoes. But now the craziest thing is, since I signed with Jordan, the 11s this year, they're going to be our cleat that we're going to wear next season. But since we made the playoffs, only the teams that made the playoffs with the Jordan brand members are able to get them for the playoffs. So I'm like, I told a lot of my teammates yesterday, they're like, man, those 11s are so nice. I'm like, I appreciate y'all, because if I wasn't playing here, I wouldn't have got them yet.
Couldn't get them. Exactly. But the thing is, I mean, you may have signed there a few years ago, but you've been a Jordan guy, and you've got an amazing collection already. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick one pair of Jordans that are your all-time favorite, can you do it? What would they be?
I can't. Right. I'm going to name at least five pair. It's no one Jordan really stands out to me. It's just I love a lot of them.
Give me a few pair, and then how many do you have total?
Okay, I'll give you the OVO 12s, the all white OVO 12s. I'm going to give you the Concords. I'm going to give you the band ones. I'm gonna give you the Oregon threes and the Oregon fours.
Okay, all right. So there was no doubt you couldn't pick one. I'm glad the Concords
were
in there. How many pair do you have? Do you know?
I say about 1,200. Got
wow.
About 1,200 pairs of sneakers.
So where do you keep those things? Do you have a separate warehouse, separate space?
I actually turned two rooms in the closet.
Right.
So then they like just it looks like a storage room at a sneaker store.
Let's talk Wild Card Weekend very quickly. Wild Card Weekend, one of the best weekends of the year in sports. You've got a couple of games on Saturday. You've got a couple of games on Sunday. You chase that with a Monday night bonus, a national championship game in college football. This is a huge sports weekend. But if this Wild Card Weekend looks a little bit different, it's probably because it is. We've got four games slated, and they're all big betting spreads. This is not a big gambling house. But it bears mentioning, big betting spreads. The Chiefs are favored over Tennessee by 8.5. The Rams are giving a touchdown to Atlanta, the defending NFC champs. Vegas is telling you that they believe in Sean McVay as much as I do, even if the Rams have never been there before. The Jags are serving teal beer and burgers to their fans, and they're serving the Bills 9 points at Caesars Palace right now. And all those tired takes about how hard it is to beat a team three times in a single season, Vegas doesn't think so. They've got New Orleans, a touchdown favorite over the Panthers, who they've beaten by double-digit figures twice already this year. Again, this is not a big gambling house. You don't hear me breaking down betting lines, talking teasers, over-unders. But these big spreads mean one of two things. We're going to very quickly sort out the contenders from the pretenders, or we are going to have a weekend of absolute chaos on our hands. Because realize what Vegas is saying. Vegas is telling you they're all in on Alex Smith and Andy Reid in a playoff game. That they're not buying the Falcons, who led last year's Super Bowl 28-3 at halftime, but have been a week away from putting it all together for 17 straight weeks. Hell, they're telling you that Blake Bortles gets a touchdown and a field goal against somebody else, and they're expected to win. And that's with Tyrod Taylor playing quarterback and not Nate Peterman. And a Carolina team that a month ago looked like it might be the best team in the NFC might as well have packed an extra carry-on to stick around Bourbon Street and start the offseason in style. Hey, they don't build those towers in Vegas because the house is wrong. But when was the last time an NFL weekend went all chalk? This is going to be really interesting to see. Landry Shamet is my guest. Landry, so good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. All right, so lots to get caught up on. Let me ask you this first. You moved to the American Athletic Conference, and you blew out Houston in the home opener last night. It's a game where you guys absolutely took over in the first half. So my question is, how important was it to come out and make a statement in that you're not just here to take part in the conference, but you're here to win that conference and dominate?
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's our mindset. Obviously, moving conferences has been a big deal here in Wichita. You know, a lot of hype, a lot of buzz going on around the city. And I mean, there's still people naysaying a little bit, but, you know, we wanted to just come out and, you know, put a good product on the shelf and show people, you know, that we're a good team and we're deserving of, you know, being worthy of winning this conference if we do so.
Well, you showed that last night. Listen, I know you're not going to make it about you, but I thought Kelvin Sampson made an amazing statement about you after the game. Let me just read this. He said, quote, "He's the real deal. The kid's the best player I've seen this year. They don't make them like him very often. He's really good. I love his demeanor and his poise. When you give him the ball, it will make you a better coach. You better appreciate him around here. He's really good. He's different than everybody else. By far the best player on the floor." I mean, Landry, that is crazy praise from a guy who's been around for a long, long time. What's your reaction when you hear that from an opposing coach?
Yeah, that was, you know, I did hear about that last night and saw the clip of him talking. That was pretty crazy, you know, especially Coach Sampson. You know, obviously he's a known name, a high heralded name, and has seen a lot of good players. And, you know, it was really cool to kind of get that praise. But, you know, a lot of that goes to my teammates and stuff. They make me look pretty good. And, yeah, that's something pretty cool that I got to hear.
No, that certainly is, and I expect you to answer it like that too. You'll take it off of you and share it with the teammates, but that's an amazing thing for a coach like that to say about a player on an opposing team. Now, you played a really tough non-conference schedule, including Notre Dame, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma, yep, to name only a few. How much did you enjoy that challenge, and then what did you take away from that as a team?
It was, I mean, obviously a lot of fun. As a competitor, you know, you want to play, you know, the best of the best, and I think we – definitely got a good taste of some really good teams around the country, and I think we learned a lot. I think that it's safe to say that Notre Dame game was a good pinch early that we probably needed. You know, play a full 40 minutes, you got to do that in college basketball against good teams to win, and you know, we didn't close that game out, and I think, you know, who's to say if we win that game somehow that we go to Stillwater and beat Oklahoma State, or we go to Baylor and beat Baylor. You know, so I think it was a good learning tool for us, and we kind of came out of that stronger and got some really good experiences for hopefully in March.
Landry Shamet joining us. Now, this is a huge Greg Marshall house. I'm not sure how many guys I've come across in the game who've got his personality, his passion, his fire, his intensity, and I've known him a pretty long time, and he's always been like that, but what's it like to play for him?
You know, he's a hell of a coach. He, you know, he's passionate and wants to win so bad, and you better match that passion and want to win if you want to play for him. You know, he's I think his best quality is that he never lets guys get comfortable. Some people confuse his, you know, he's really hard on us and, you know, coaches us and is, you know, almost never satisfied. And some people confuse that for, you know, maybe somewhat of a bad attitude or something like that. But I think that's his best quality, that he can't, you know, like we have film today, and I'm sure it'll feel like a 10-point loss or something, or things we could have, you know, done better in the game against Houston last night. So he always makes it to where you feel like you have a lot more room to grow, and kind of never lets you get too high or too low. I think that's his best quality. But it's unique playing for him. And I think the biggest thing is just makes you tougher and a little grittier playing for him.
Right, so maybe you knew that when you signed up, or maybe you didn't. But when you were being recruited, right, Ron Baker and Fred VanVleet were killing it at Wichita State, but the program was not in the spot that it's in right now, and it would have been easy for there to be a huge drop-off after they left, but that didn't happen. So what did you see in the opportunity at Wichita State that made you feel like that was the right place for you?
Yeah, well, honestly, Ron and Fred were a big reason why I did choose Wichita State. I unfortunately broke my foot my freshman year when they were seniors, so I wanted to play with them really bad, but only got to play three games in medical hardship that year. But I think the biggest thing was just knowing what coaches were around here and knowing what Coach Marshall's makeup was. And I didn't I knew there was not going to be any drop off. I just, you know, we worked too hard here, and I knew it wasn't just, I mean, given Ron and Fred are two, you know, legends here in Wichita, it wasn't just a two-man team. You know, it was a full team from top to bottom, and guys playing hard and getting coached and working hard every day. And I knew that that wasn't going to go away when those two graduated and left. So I think it was just bound to continue to go up and up.
You know, it's hard to imagine right now since you're one of the best players in college basketball, but you weren't highly recruited when you first started playing at Park Hill High School, and there was actually this notion from some scouts that your body was too awkward to play major Division I ball. What do you remember about that time, and then how much did it motivate you that you were initially overlooked by some?
Yeah, I've always had a little, you know, chip on my shoulder, and even now with, you know, some of the kind of rating, I still – that's not going to change for me. I still will always feel, you know, overlooked and underrated. And that's just how I handle my business. That's what I'm doing. And I do remember in high school, you know, kind of there were other guys in the state and in my city even that were, you know, seen as better than me. And when I knew it in my heart that I was better than them, and I just, you know, wanted to go out and prove that, you know, I could play at the highest level and play well. And I mean, I've heard naysaying from day one, you know, obviously. And I'm just glad that I, you know, continue to work hard, and my makeup doesn't allow me to give in or listen to, you know, negative talk about me. And I'm just going to continue to handle my business and try to get better and better as I can.
Landry Shamet, my guest. Well said. One last thought. Growing up, the story goes that when you were two, your mother, Melanie, gave you a ball, and she'd form her arms in a circle, and you dribble up and score on her arms like they were a hoop. Yeah. She worked so hard to make sure that you had everything that you needed. Give me some thoughts about your mother. What kind of an impact has she had on you as a person and even as a player?
Man, I don't know where to start, really. You know, I'm only child, and she's a single mother, and you know, it's just been us two from the jump, you know. And it wasn't always like smooth and easy, but you know, I don't understand how single mothers do it, but she made, you know, a life for me that was far greater than what it should have been given the cards we had. You know, her drive and competitiveness, that's where I get it from. She played college volleyball at Boise State, so from, and her just, I don't know, she always wanted the best for me and never really allowed me to, you know, settle for anything less than that. And you know, she's my biggest inspiration because I know how hard she's still working, you know, trying to pay bills and put food on the table and stuff. So you know, she's the image in my head when I'm, you know, at the gym or when I'm tired or whatever the case may be. So it's just, you know, she's all I think about, and I'm just trying to try to attempt to repay her for what she's, you know, done for me, man, over the last 20 years.
I knew this guy would understand. Let's go to Hollywood. He's your 2013 Smack-Off winner, Mark in Hollywood. Mark, happy New Year, brother. What's going on?
Big Jim! Happy New Year to you, kid. Yo, congrats on the TV show. So many things to like, starting with the guys in the back, who are clearly the five Turkish millionaires in that human trafficking auction scene from the movie Taken, to the futuristic, clean, bright, white studio that looks like you're either a helmsman on the Starship Enterprise or filling in for the second dude in Daft Punk. And, of course, the lettuce cam, where if you turn to CBS Sports 2, you can actually watch a feed of your finely curated Samson-like locks. But with all of that good comes some bad. And not to be racist, but not to be critical, but look, there's a difference between being against bum smack, Jim, and opening the doors of your crib to have any homeless half sandwich eater that blinks your way. I mean, look at these bums. You just laid them out. I'm glad you let Brad in so he can have his gender revealed on live TV. I'm thrilled that Mark in Boston had the guts to call in after Harbaugh coached the only team in the Big Ten to lose a bowl game. And it's wonderful that you gave Rick in Buffalo a platform so he could stop mistaking his fingers for Twinkies. But Jim, these characters are so emotionally damaged, you're bringing your audience to tears. Are we watching the Rome show or This Is Us? We interrupt this take for a Jim Rome on CBS Sports Weekly segment, Mark and Hollywood's Hot Sports Picks of the Week. Okay, here we go. New segment, Mark and Hollywood's Hot Sports Picks of the Week. Suits in New York, where the hell is my graphic? Okay, wild card weekend in the NFC. I got the Chiefs over the Falcons, the Saints over the Titans, and in the AFC, I got the Rams over the Jags, sorry, Danica, and finally the Panthers over the Bills. And those were Mark and Hollywood's Hot Sports Picks of the Week, sponsored by your mother. Lastly, Jim, what happened to the Jungle Boy George, Mike and Indy? You just called him out. What, does he have PTSD from finishing second again? You pulling a Brady now? Wah! I didn't win Clone of the Week! Wah! Why is that such a surprise, ugly Paul Rudd? Some people peak in high school, it's okay. Just come on back. Call it 11:59 so no one can take a crack back at you. I don't care. I mean, look, I don't want to speculate where this robot is because, Jim, that's irresponsible journalism. But if I had to speculate, he's probably somewhere in a dark room, shell-shockingly rocking back and forth, repeating that old first-grade rhyme, first is worst, second's best, third's a nerd, and Chael's son and has nice breasts. That's a tongue!
Rack him, Mark in Hollywood. That's why he won the Smack Off in 2013. Where are you, ugly Paul Rudd? Mike and Indy can handle this. In Wisco. Benny, what's going on?
Not much, man. How are you?
I'm great. Things are so good.
Excellent. Good to hear. Hey, congrats on being a star of the screen, and congrats on already having a longer run on television than our very own Mark in Hollywood. I was talking with Hawk while I was on hold about his tweet asking who's going to join him for his annual dryuary campaign, and apparently Aya Frady's voice was the first one to volunteer. Other notable participants are the XR4TI's skin. Hey, quick rhetorical question, Jim. What is the difference between the Golden Girls and the XR4TI on television? And a quick answer would be the Golden Girls only had one Blanche. Are you kidding me with how pale these guys are? I mean, was the actual physical move to the new studio the first time these guys have been outside in the past year? Hey, XR Nosferatu I. You guys make Marilyn Manson look like one of those Jersey Shore idiots. It looks like someone fed Michelangelo's David statue a bunch of Hot Pockets and then squirted it with a fire extinguisher. So, guys, get outside this weekend, soak some sunshine, let's treat next week like a Color Rush game, and keep in mind that the bomb cyclone is out east, not behind the glass. Mice up, son. Mice up.
Rack him.
4, 3, 2, 1.
What's cracking? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A very happy 2018 to you. It is a whole new era, a new start. Welcome to the program. What's cracking? Now, to those of you who aren't just listening but are watching, yes, I said, watching the program for the first time, welcome to a huge, huge day in jungle history. Yeah! This simulcast is all about us. It's about the brand that we have built together. Couldn't have done it without you clones. Can't go forward without you clones. I want you to be a part of this thing. Jason Lockenfora is my guest.
Happy New Year, man. I am honored. I didn't know what the dress code was. I don't know. Would a ratty old Bad Brains t-shirt have sufficed?
The Browns join.
There's a banner going up right now in this new studio. I'm just looking for the right place for it. Way to show up and not make a play when you had you.
He dropped the ball.
Credit to the Browns. They finished what they started. Way to man down.
Yogi Roth. Yogi, what's up, man? Happy New Year.
Dude, how great is this?
I've grown up listening to your voice. It was so cool. I can remember walking through the streets of Pittsburgh in college and us trying to mimic you. You know, right. Congratulations.
Touchdown, oh Cincinnati.
Buffalo, I've got to ask, how you all living? Bills Mafia, have you woken up from your dream yet? Because your long nightmare is over. Lorenzo Alexander, my guest.
You're looking at 4th and 12, and it's like, and then they had that big play, and you see the explosion going on, which is great, especially to be able to celebrate with a guy like Kyle Williams.
And the cherry on top of this delicious hot foot Sunday, with seeing the stupefied look on John Harbaugh's face, being a complete crybaby, must run in the Harbaugh family.
From the one, they give it to Kyle Williams. Goes into the end zone.
Kyle Williams joining us.
Well, I haven't taken a handoff since high school, but I remember the form. I think I can do it. Sure enough, you know, first down, they called Jumbo Kyle, and I said, here we go, let's do it.
Kenny, my man, is that really you?
Jimmy!
Yes!
You're the man.
Go Bills, for we are here to cheer for you. Go Bills, we are your fans, so true.
I want to get high, so high. And Iron Mike took those words to heart just for all of you heads out there.
You have a problem, sir.
It's great to see your face, your facial expressions when these clowns call in. Okay, so
his name's Del Rio, and he don't work in Oakland.
Let's go ahead and look at this face. That's my clown TV face. Like, come on, bro. Really?
Big congratulations to you and the crew. Freddie Mercury, Alvin.
Bruh.
Thanks, bruh. Small critique, though. Find some B-roll of Orange County. Come on, guys, bruh. Enough of these shots of the 110 and the 10.
Latavius Murray is my guest. So what was it like for you to watch your school play the way it did this year?
It was everything. Obviously, I want UCF to get the respect that they deserve. I wanted it when I was there. We call ourselves the National Champs if nobody else wants to give it.
I owe it to myself to pick up the phone if it rings, right? Trust me, if and when the Lions do call me, you know I'm going to kick the tires.
Congratulations!
Do I not owe it to myself and my family to do so? Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Jim, you're big time, bro. When you're on the big screen right here at Caesars, you're big time, bro.
Awesome. They've got the show up in Caesars Palace. Hell yeah!
Hell
yeah! Email.
More Hawks shirts having their own makeup lady. For some reason, some of you thought that this was a sound drop. We recycle, for the record.
We're going to go into the Jack. We're going to go in there and tear it up.
We're going to California. We're going to meet Jacksonville. On that night, Roger Goodell will walk to the podium and say, the Browns picking first select the wrong guy. It doesn't mean that either guy is the wrong guy.
Sam Darnold has a cinder block head and a granite chin, man.
It means that Cleveland is the wrong place. Brad in Corona.
Kevin and Bean were right. You were looking good, my friend. Your lettuce is on point. Every time they cut to the rest of your crew, it's a different story. It looks like they're the launch team for a missile that just crashed into the ocean. It's all dark. Computers glowing off of sweaty faces.
Wow, Rome's callers are so much better. Not really, no. I've got a few select callers that are amazing and a lot of bad ones, but all the ones that are amazing are calling this week.
You can tell Hawk that if he's going for that Eastern European human trafficker look, he has nailed it.
Take a run down to Walgreens, pick up some low T gel, balance out those testosterone levels, man. Try again.
Do I rack that call or do I run that call? Can I do both?
The clock is ticking.
If I give myself a tongue right now and that mic slides across the studio, I got a real problem, right? Now, what the hell? Dan, yeah, it made me a little nervous.
Now,
you know,
now.
You're not the handiest dude ever. And if that microphone were...
Wore the XR4TI and wore you and this simulcast.
Now I'm like a dog. Hey, roll over, Vance Mack. Hey, here, boy. What else can we get him to do? Joe Hayden is my guest.
The all-white OVO 12s, Concord, Span 1s, Oregon 3s, and Oregon 4s.
How many pair do you have? Do you know?
I say about 1,200.
Twitter! What are these guys doing? A telethon? If I call Adam Hawk, is he going to ask for a pledge or a donation?
Wah! I didn't win clone of the week. Wah!
Why is that such a surprise, ugly Paul Rudd?
Alvy got makeup.
We're Andy Dalton.
Isn't that every father's dream that their son grows up to be a porn star?
What's going on?
But they call me the Red Dog.
American Chewy.
Warned me and my fiance.
And wore Jordan.
For sure, man. I appreciate it.
Dude, are those polar bears?
Big!
Oh my God.
Outside sucks.
Good night now.
There you have it, clones. An amazing week. I'm proud of you all. Now let's go ahead, hit reset, and run it back once again next week. I will see you then. Have an amazing weekend. I'm out.